Welcome to the third episode of the 404 Era podcast, where we interview graduating artists completing their bachelor's degree in art and art history at the University of Toronto, Mississauga, and Sheridan College. I'm your host, Veronica Spiljack, and today I'll be interviewing graduating artists Sam Hill and Gabrielle Diaz. Before we start, I would like to introduce what the third theme called Check URL, which is listed in the title of this episode, means in the context of the 404 Era exhibition and its correlation to Sam and Gabrielle's works. Check URL describes checking spelling, hyphens, page extension, and so forth. In this case, the 404 Era exhibition uses this term to identify re-examination and questions of our social systems, which can be seen in Sam Hill's work titled Breathing In and Gabrielle Diaz's work Enclosed Numbing.
Yeah, so nice seeing you again. Since I already know you very well, maybe you can introduce yourself to our audience, maybe what your favorite course this year you're taking, and talk about your practice as an artist.
Yeah, so my name is Sam Hill. I'm fifth year for the Sheridan and UTM joint program for art and art history. I'm graduating this, as most of us are. my practice largely, I'm mainly a painter and a drawer, but recently, and through this the artwork that we're going to be talking about later, I've been exploring like sculptural and video work. It's kind of new to me, but I'm mainly a painter, and that's kind of like my discipline. In terms of my favorite course this semester, I've been doing drawing 4 with Lauren Nurse, and it's so great. I love that course. I love doing like the fourth year drawing and painting courses, because they're just
Can you talk a bit about drawing 4 and like, what projects you've been doing?
Well, for the project that I'm exhibiting for the grad show came from my drawing 4 independent research. Through that course, we just are doing like independent studies. So we make our own proposal, we submit it to the teacher, and we kind of dictate our own schedule to produce a body of work. Typically, if it wasn't for the pandemic, we'd be producing it like, you know, you can shoot in class, but also mm-hmm. just like usually like two or three projects. But I kind of negotiated with my professor to kind of culminate my work into one giant project, which is this one, through a couple different like photography, video, and like sculptural work,
right,
as well as some drawing to be doing at the end of the semester. So it's like I'm doing sort of three mini projects within one giant one, all related. Aww. There's also a book project, which I'm just waiting on my book to come in the mail.
Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, so the book is just taking all the documentation of this project and putting it into a book format. So I just sort of took my artist statement and a poem that I wrote for this project, and I've been interspersing the text throughout with the images, sort of screen capping video stills and sort of putting them into the book with like trying to figure out graphic design and stuff like that.
That must be very new to you, just like bookmaking and inserting images and text into it. And
I've done bookmaking before, but not like image. Like I did like drawing books, like, you know, make a book and then put drawings in it, but I've never worked with like
from drawing 3. I remember your book.
So this is like beautiful. More new stuff with like, you know, doing, trying to figure out like photo resolution and stuff like that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's amazing. So I guess like moving on to your work that you submitted, titled Breathing In. So I want to ask, what kind of research have you conducted in the process of developing this work?
So like just to precurse that, a lot of my past work and work I've been working on recently, they all kind of revolve around exploring the body through perceptions and experiences. And that's sort of what I was continuing on with. It's kind of subconscious. It was something I noticed when I was developing this body of work, and I'm like, wow, most of my past work in the past like 2-3 years have all been about like how we view bodies and how we view our own bodies, how we view other people's bodies. So through this, like when I was doing the research for this, it started off as like I wanted to explore my own anxieties around like symptoms of like diseases, I guess, not diseases, illnesses, pain, and like just because not necessarily because of the pandemic, but more to do with like, you know, I've been the past couple of years I've been like doctors constantly being like, you have diabetes, and then I get take tests and I don't have diabetes or something like that. So I was like, how do these symptoms like work into like, you know, how we experience pain or these how like they're perceived online or through like the doctor's office. And that kind of led me to like these images of like, I was doing research on that. And then I was like, oh, I don't know if I can actually do that. So I found these images of headaches and how pain is interspersed around the head and how they affect like where the pain pressure points are. And it was just these images of like heads with like these red glowing auras, and I kind of got inspired by that to make sort of masks around that. Mm-hmm. And like to answer the research question, I kind of was looking at I was looking at like these health, like, you know, WebMD, like those really not great sources for finding out like when you look Google like a certain symptom and the first thing that pops up is these like they're medical, like sort quote unquote,
somewhat.
Yeah, they're medical websites that kind of blow symptoms out of proportion.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I was looking at like how, you know, what they're saying about headaches, what they're saying, like what headaches lead to and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so I was sort of taking that and then combining it with these sort of health and wellness blogs that like you see on like Instagram or Facebook, where it's like, this is how you manage pain. And like, it's kind of what I was seeing, and it's something I experienced too, where people kind of like talk about pain in a way that's super curable by doing like simple steps, like exercising or which does help. But like, they're just like, oh, if you do this yoga pose, you will no longer have a migraine. Or if you sniff a lemon, you will no longer have a stress headache. And it's kind of these sort of bite-sized exploration of like how to manage pain that kind of belittles the experience of pain. And that's kind of where I was going and how my research was going. And I wasn't really paying attention too much about like being accurate with this, because I'm not really talking about like, you know, going to the doctor and actually exploring what is actually true, but more exploring how it's dealt with online or in the media.
Can you talk about more about your masks, the headpieces that you created, and I guess like maybe like what the each headache or tension headache is associated with it, and also like the process, like if you don't mind mentioning to us about the process of making that, and what kinds of materials worked for you when making those headpieces.
Yeah, sure. So to begin, like for the mask that I was making, the headache mask, I was pretty much taking, like I said, I looked at these images. The first one I made was a migraine mask, which it's typically, or at least based off of the Google searches that I've done, it's pretty much based, like usually focused around like one part, like one side of your head, focused around like the temple, the under the cheek, which is like typically where sinus appear, like your sinus, I don't know what the correct terminology for it, like I said, I wasn't fully focusing on like actually accurately but it's pretty much these pressure points that are like, you know, chin, under your eye, and your temple and head, forehead. And that's where all these pain resides. And so for my mask, I pretty much took a, I had this styrofoam head that I bought a couple of years ago for modeling wigs or hats. And I pretty much covered it in Vaseline and then took paper mache. Like I had all these like, you know, old prints, you know, old like paper, printer paper that like had been used already. And I'm like, I hate throwing this away. I want to recycle it. So I pretty much did paper mache with like wheat paste. So it's like flour mixed with hot water and sugar and glue. Well, it depends. Sometimes I did flour with sugar and sometimes I did flour with glue, depending on what layer I was working with. Mm-hmm. And I pretty much layered it up, and by using this sort of on the styrofoam head as a mold. And then I spray painted them red and like attached an elastic band around it. And I kind of did that for all of the masks. But then for each of the masks, I kind of wanted to include sort of a textural element on the top layer to sort of show, sort of to visualize this kind of like where the paint, like sort of, I don't know how to explain it, but
like for the kind of feeling of pain, like for example, like the tension, or I guess like the one with the spikes.
Yeah.
I definitely had headaches like that before, where it just felt like very sharp pain and it's just like immediate.
Yeah. So that one specifically, it's like more of a helmet. It sits at the back of your head, on the base of your skull. Mm-hmm. And that one, like you were saying, is the one with the, toothpicks that I glued to stab into your
my god.
It doesn't actually hurt that much, but they're pretty much like they're kind of poking through.
Yeah.
And that was I believe that one is the arthritis. So like when if you have certain types of arthritis, you get the pain can reside sort of like at the back of your skull, which kind of affects your spine.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I don't know the full, I mostly know more about like hand arthritis, but that's kind of the research I found for that one. And the same, like you said, with the tension headache, it's kind of like I used pipe cleaners and a glue gun to kind of raise to do these like lines that are coming across the forehead, sort of showing how like the movement of pain.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then some of them, most of them actually do have, an intervention of like I glued rubber balls and styrofoam balls on the inside of the mask, so they kind of push against certain, like specifically for the migraine mask, I actually glued styrofoam balls where the cheek is, where the chin is, and where the temple is, so that when you wear it, it's going to touch your face, and it's going to the styrofoam balls are going to press into your face when you're wearing it, and it kind of creates a headache as well.
Oh my god.
And I know this works because I got testimonies from my models who are wearing it in the video, and they're like, that was the most uncomfortable I've ever
felt. Oh my god.
And I'm like, I'm sorry, but I need this. This is actually great. I'm so glad you actually felt pain.
Oh, that's that's kind of like a side effect after wearing those headpieces. The materials that you used to make those headpieces, they were like quite accessible. Like, were these items that were around your house, or did you just have to go out of your way to access these items, materials?
Yeah, so my family is kind of a hoarder situation, not in the extreme sense, but we kind of like to keep like materials that we used. I am super about like reusing packaging and stuff like that. I did have to buy a couple things, but I was kind of just buying from the dollar store, and I made sure to use everything that I bought from the dollar store. So like styrofoam balls, I kind of had to outsource at the dollar store. But we already had paper was just at my house, stuff that we already used. I already have like a whole bunch of glue gun stuff. We have a lot of like elastic bands and stuff like that from, because we like to make clothes. Yeah, pretty much. It was all like, I think I had to like buy a couple of things, but like they were very cheap from the dollar store, and I just wanted to make sure I used every piece of like the packaging and stuff like that to like, you know, not throw things out.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Yeah, especially like in a time of COVID where it's harder to access these materials, it's great that you have them around your house and kind of repurposing and reusing them into this project. That's wonderful. So I guess since I personally know that your background in art has leaned towards more painting and drawing, and you might have mentioned this before at the beginning, but what drew you, I guess, towards turning to video and making sculptural headpieces?
So I have always struggled with, I've been a painter for so long, and that's where like my talents lie, I guess, but I've always struggled with actually depicting, like I have these ideas in my head and I know I can visualize what they would look like, but all the time whenever I'm visualizing them, they kind of appear to me as more of like moving images or like series, and like creating five paintings is, I mean, I'm a quick painter, but like it's still quite a lot. It's a lot of materials, a lot of time put into it. And I found that it was through another project that I was doing where I was like, I was filming myself like make these like clay sculptures and stuff like that. And I was like, hey, I can, you know, continue doing this. Mm-hmm. But I've never, you know, I'm not very, I have little experience like editing videos and stuff like that, and like luckily we have like the Premiere, like the Adobe Cloud access, so I had like Premiere Pro on hand because of Sheridan, that I just sort of played around with these sort of modalities. So it was kind of like my teacher sort of being like, hey, you should probably, like, I feel like this would be better if you filmed it or did an animation. And I wasn't ready to dip my toe fully into animation, but I was like, I can do this if I like filmed it and just edited it together. So that was kind of like that. And then for the mask, I was kind of inspired by, I was sort of doing a education placement. It's not an internship, but like a placement at the Textile Museum for their education department last February. And in February, they had an exhibition called Wild, which featured two artists, Humboldt Magason and Omar Bedrin, who were working with making like masks and helmets or costume pieces. Humboldt specifically was using like beads and these really multimedia materials to make these sort of helmets, is what they called them, at that sort of experience, like an exploration of like queerness, but also like when you look at them, they kind of have these like very visceral visualizations of not pain, but like, I don't know, there's one that they made where it's like this red mask and then there's like these rays of wood, or I can't remember what the material was, but like rays coming out from the mask. And I was like, that is such a powerful, like, image. And I was just really inspired by that. And then Omar Bedrin makes these knitted masks that are kind of, like, fully covering the face. And I just, they're really, like, interesting and kind of, like, I don't want to say, like, what, you know, like, the sort of idea of ugly. And I don't mean that they're ugly. They're actually really beautiful. But it's sort of the idea of like, it's not aesthetically pleasing mm-hmm. in the way that's traditionally found. And I kind of love this sort of idea of like making something that's janky and, you know, kind of creepy looking, mm-hmm. but that kind of expresses like experiences. So that's kind of why I started focusing on masks and stuff like that, is because I was inspired by those two artists.
Speaking of experiences, I guess, are these themes that you're working with, which is chronic illness, physical capacity of the body, wellness misconceptions. Are those kinds of themes something that you want to continue pursuing and investigate in your practice currently and for the future?
Yeah, so I wanted to continue this body of work because with the ones that I'm exploring in my videos, they're kind of very much focused on very limited perceptions because I didn't want to go too far into like very extremes cases of chronic illness or chronic pain because I don't have the personal experience to talk about that. I'm not diagnosed with anything, but like, you know, I have experience with like constant headache pains, and my models that I was using, they both dealt with arthritis pain. So that's kind of what was moving that idea forward. So like my mom, who's one of the models, she has like arthritis in her wrist. So we were working together to create these sort of mechanics for your hand that show this sort of limitation of, you know, could be carpal tunnel, could be arthritis in the hand. And then the other model, Annika, has, I can't remember specifically what she said, but she has like pain in her hips and her spine. So we are talking about these sort of movements that you can create mm-hmm. to deal with that kind of pain. But moving forward, I would love to expand my research and experiences by actually talking to people who have experienced more extreme cases, because again, I don't want to like talk about something that I haven't experienced. I want to create empathy to, you know, show these experiences, but like if I am only reading what these experiences are, it doesn't kind of counter, it's not the same. So mm-hmm. going forward, I do want to, like, I don't think it's going to be a form of like videos or something, but I do want to like, you know, open up the discussion to other people to come to me, you know, in the future. I don't know if it's going to happen like this summer or whatever, but in the future I would love to hear from, you know, people who have experienced more extreme cases or have diagnoses, or doesn't even have to be diagnosis, because I don't think this is, you know, I kind of want to more explore experiences as opposed to like medical cases. Right. It's more about like what you actually feel in your body and what you believe is true, as opposed right. to what someone else told you is true. And so right. you know, in the future, like I keep saying this, but I would love to hear from other people and, you know, collaborate with them to create more work that actually explore like more parts of the body besides just the head and the hands.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that was, I'm excited to see your future works, Sam. And I guess on the topic of going forward, first of all, congratulations on completing your undergrad for art and art history. So exciting. What are your plans after graduation?
Oh, gosh.
I'm sorry if that's a big question. Or even after COVID ends.
Yeah. So like ends. My original plan was to like travel for, you know, a year and a half, and then look to getting masters. I definitely do want to look into getting my master's. I think due to COVID and, or just, you know, personal preferences, I want to wait a couple of more years before I'm ready for that. But I'm kind of more interested in leaning towards art education, or just like working with galleries or museums on like a back side kind of thing, like backgrounds kind of thing. I feel like my creative energy comes from working with others as opposed to being like the sole artist. And I really enjoy helping others like develop their artwork. So I want to try finding like a job or career that focuses more on that, where I'm not just telling people what to do. I'm not the person doing it. I'm just sort of helping people develop their art practice and showing, getting ways that they can exhibit, and also, you know, maybe exhibiting my work as well, but I'm not super concerned about that. I love working in museums. Like, it's very fun, and doing all these special events and stuff like that. So I think, you know, my master's, I'm kind of leaning towards like museum education or programming, stuff right. like that.
Right. Wow. Yeah. That sounds exciting. I also love jumping off of other people's ideas. I love jumping off of your ideas for my projects too. And it sounds so exciting. All the best to you. I wish you all the success there is after graduation and just moving forward as an artist. And yeah, I guess before we go, I just want to thank you for coming on to this episode, Sam. We're so happy to have you. Just talk about your work, who you are as an artist, and where you're going to be moving forward after graduation. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Welcome, Gabrielle Diaz. Welcome. Hi. Hello. How are you?
I'm great. How about you?
Not too bad. A little nervous.
Me too, honestly.
Don't stress. Like, don't worry about it. So for the first off, tell us a bit about yourself. What courses you're taking right now, what you've been up to, what you had for breakfast.
I actually just had milk for breakfast, but I am in my fourth and last year of double majoring in art and art history and CCIT, which is the Communication, Culture, and Information Technology. And I guess I've just been very interested in design in all the 4 years that I've been in the program.
Mm-hmm. Have you always been interested in design? Like, did you knew that you would like design, or did you work with other mediums before then?
I guess design was like my initial thing. And then once I explored like the realm of like art and art history, I explored like photography that I was interested in, and also like sculpture. So that really comes into play in my work sometimes.
That's amazing. That's great. So let's talk about your digital work, Enclosed Numbing. So tell me a little bit about that.
So basically it was an inspiration of like Instagram and like my own outlook on my self-expression and just body image of myself, because I'm like constantly surrounded by social media now more than ever, that we're in like isolation, and like it's one of the only forms of entertainment that is available, and I can just easily scroll through, and I find it hard to kind of have this like multiple perspectives of other users when all I have on my feed is like just beauty stuff and like filtered like faces and like diet lollipops from the Kardashians or something. So that's always a struggle,
and it's very like more so like whitewashed in a way.
Yeah,
energy very much, is like centering around that. Mm-hmm. And can you talk about like the color palettes, I guess, in your work and its correlation to that? Can you expand about that more?
So in the whole picture, there's like skin tones of like mostly light and some dark, but hardly like any like very like darker black skin tones. Mm-hmm. Because I found like in my childhood personally, mm-hmm. that kind of representation wasn't there, right. which it should be, like it is now. But like the most simplest things, like my parents would buy me like these set of like Barbie dolls that came in like three. There was like the white one, and then there was the prince, and then there was like the black one. And like unconsciously you just like get rid of that, and you shouldn't. But like now in the society that we're like all equally like looked at, but I feel like we still have like a long ways to go to like develop that beauty standard of like everybody's like equally beautiful. So Those are like the skin tone colors there. And then the lighter colors in the photo is basically like surrounding my own like body parts, and sometimes like the parts that I'm more self-conscious about. And it's like when you take like a bunch of photos of yourself, like selfies, and then you look through all of them and then you just notice that one feature that like you don't like,
and you're just kind of hung up on and like
and then you just end up like deleting like 99% of it, and you're left with like one photo, which is I find really toxic in some ways. So
yeah, I completely relate to that. So as I guess in terms of this work, why digital? Like, why did you choose digital to talk about this kind of concept within your work? And do you think you'll also continue to use digital art in terms of like your future projects? Do you think, is that something you're still going to be wanting to do? Or if you want to talk a little bit about that.
So I guess like digital, other than it's like the medium that I'm most comfortable with, I do explore other mediums, but like digital, I feel like makes more of an impact when it comes to the themes of my work personally. Like, because social media, just even though it's like digital and it's just with you, like you always have your phone, you always have like your laptop on you. And no matter where, there's some type of like Twitter pop-up ad or something like that. Unlike, I mean, print would be great too, but I feel like when it comes to digital, I feel like it just incorporates that whole aspect of like, I guess like cookie advertising and all of that, where like ads follow you wherever you go on what website. Just like those random things that you see, like you look at one website and then suddenly it's on another website magically. And I feel like that's kind of scary, but that's kind of what I want to touch up upon as well. So,
So I guess as a digital artist, what are your plans, I guess, maybe after you graduate, during this time where almost our whole lifestyle is kind of shifting online?
I guess I want to kind of explore more works in the digital realm and kind of like combine it with the other like photography and like sculpture practices. I'm very like, I like to do DIY sometimes and just collage stuff like paper and like scissors and stuff. I find that during the pandemic, I've actually been creating more work than I would like personally versus like if I was in school, like physically. I guess I'm just getting more inspiration from the pandemic more than ever. But I think just the time alone sometimes has like, really helped me like explore like what stuff I'm interested in putting out there. And that's basically it.
Can you tell us a little bit about those projects that you were working on during
So I worked with the Take Action Gallery, and I had
exhibition. Congrats.
Thank you. Thank you. Those works were like some of them were accidental. Like there was this really one pixelated work where it was initially a picture of me, and then when I imported it into Illustrator, it went corrupt on me. And I had the same experience in my first year of photography. I remember when I was importing all my photos and they just corrupted, and I wanted to cry, but the prof was all like, you know, this is abstract art, you can maybe do something with this in the future. And I explored that possibility like right now in my fourth and third year just exploring those themes of like corruption and manipulation of reality, I guess, into something I want it to be perfect, but really mm-hmm. reality can't be perfect at all. So mm-hmm. yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I think for me during lockdown, I avoided doing as much work as possible.
For sure.
It was a very different feeling, a very mm-hmm. weird feeling. But I think I turned towards more like poetry and stuff like that. So I think like finding other outlets that I never knew was also that might have been a learning experience for you, like learning these different ideas within those projects you made in mm-hmm. lockdown.
Like I was going back to like mm-hmm. painting, and like I was told myself during like first and second year, like I'm gonna get back onto painting, and like I never did. So I just never had the time, you know. So I think it was a great opportunity just to explore I was missing out on. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Yeah. I guess before we go, sadly, do you have any plans after you graduate or after COVID ends even? What are your plans? The first thing that you want to do?
Honestly, just to look for a job.
All same.
I just want to get out of my part-time job, but I really... like, this is very contradicting, but I kind of want to go into advertising and just explore that world, but maybe possibly explore like artistry more, because like before going into this program, I had a very broad definition of what an artist was. And I was very intimidated because like applying to other universities, I went to like portfolio day. And like knowing me, I was only like digital stuff, and everybody else had like these big like drawing portfolios. Mm-hmm. And I was like, there's no way that I'm gonna be like fitting into here. Mm-hmm. So
do you think that career or job choice could maybe even inform or influence your work in the future, you think?
Definitely, yeah, mm-hmm. for sure.
Wow. Also I want to ask, is there any type of advice, whether that be from a prof or someone that you know or a close family member, that gave you advice that you kind of stuck with you, like kind of like your life motto? Is there anything that kind of stuck with you? Yeah, kind of like the best piece of advice that you've been given, that just kind of changed your whole worldview on everything.
As an artist personally, like I've had like all my design profs tell me like you feel like your work isn't done yet, but you feel like your work is done, sorry, and it actually isn't. Like you can always like keep improving and keep adding and just keep shaping your work to like the perfected piece you want it to be. So mm-hmm. like if you let other people see your work and they just have a completely different perspective and they add on to what possibilities you can do. So I've always, that stuck with me. So I always like ask other people, hey, what do you think? Do you think it needs more, less, or whatever that may be? So yeah.
Beautiful. What a lovely way to end this section of this episode. Thank you so much, Gabrielle, for coming and joining me today onto this 4-4 Era podcast.
Thank you, you too.
Tune into 4-4 Era's next episode, where we will feature the guest artist Bernadette Leichman and Hao Yu Zhang. Thank you so much for listening.